This is the John Gambling Show on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Now, with New York's only local News Talk morning radio program, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
Here we go, Friday John Gambling Show. Mayor Mike is here in Studio 4. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I couldn't be better. Good to have you aboard as always here on a Friday.
I like this. I've been how many years have we been doing this? 10 and a half
no,
years?
No, 11. Right?
11, yeah, I guess
11
so.
11 years. You got number 12 coming up,
and
right?
I was thinking, did we ever miss any? There was one or two I was traveling, and then there was when I was campaigning, and you had to drop me off because it was an equal time access.
Yeah, and I think that I've taken a few vacation Fridays over the years.
You have?
Yeah, so only a handful. You've taken significantly less.
I always get amazed. These people come up to me and say, I always listen to you on the radio with
and you
that
couldn't,
guy.
Can't imagine.
With that guy. What's his name?
Yeah, exactly. What's his name? Thanks a lot. always count on you. You can always count on your friends.
Absolutely.
I always say that if you can't make fun of your friends, who can you make fun of?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So the judge's taxi ruling, knocking the outer borough taxi thing out of the box.
It's not surprising. We sort of thought that we had a decent chance of losing. We believe that we have an excellent chance of winning on appeal. The only downside of that is that we're not going to have an appeal heard and argued and decided until well into this fiscal year. And so where we have in 2014, every year you start out with a deficit for the following years. It's $2.5 billion deficit, and we were going to have a plan to reduce the gap starting in November. Now I think we have to accelerate and increase the size of that plan just in case. I still think we'll win. What's at stake here is taxi service for people throughout the city. 4.5 boroughs have no service, have never had. Just think about that. And it's all a handful of owners of yellow medallions really that are trying to stop all this. They don't service these 4.5 boroughs, but they still don't want anybody else to. And then there is the issue of handicap accessibility. We think we have the right blend doing that, and the courts say that it's up to us, and we do. And if we don't have these, you're not going to have any more handicap accessible cabs out there. And then there is the money that selling another couple thousand medallions that would bring in, and that's a very big thing. That puts some immediate pressure on it, but we're thinking in some senses about the wrong thing. The real thing is getting taxi service to everybody in the city, and why not? And yet, it's not the court incidentally. The court just looks at the law and says,
correct.
Law.
And it was home rule.
And we think that we went to the city council. The city council did not, for whatever reasons, was not going to, we didn't think we couldn't negotiate a deal. The state said, you don't have to. This is something that the local assemblymen and senators from New York, only one or two senators, so it's mostly assembly, they wanted to provide taxi service for their constituents. And they said, we can do it without it. And we believe the law says that they can do it without...
Why wouldn't the city council want service for their constituents? You can't answer for them, but what have you been told?
The yellow cab industry is a very activist industry in terms of lobbying and supporting candidates. It's interesting. They think they make the argument it's going to hurt their business. But there's a ways to measure that. There's a company, TAXI, that owns a bunch of medallions, and their stock is, through all of this, has stayed at a high for the last year or two. And so there's no evidence of that. But even if that were the case, with trying to do what's right for the people, not for any one industry, and only in New York could you have a license that you can then trade afterwards and make millions of dollars on, and the city gets nothing out of it. I can't think of any place, maybe there is one or two, but this is the most insane system that was ever designed many, many years ago. And you're not going to change it, and I don't think in our lifetime, whether it should or shouldn't, you can make that argument. But this is about giving taxi service to 4.5 boroughs, and it's about money that we need to pay our teachers and firefighters and police officers. And everybody says, well, what happens if you don't have the money? Well, we're going to have to cut back. And we're going to have to cut back throughout the system. And in government's business model, if you will, is you hire people to provide services. So if you have to spend less money, it's fewer people. And you say, well, does that mean layoffs? Because that's the key word. Everybody always rushes to the to their keyboard with the word layoffs. It doesn't mean layoffs necessarily, but attrition, which is a preferable ways to do it, doesn't work all that well in a soft economy. And then some people say, well, you know, wait, because you don't know the economy could get better. There is no sign of the economy getting dramatically better. It's not getting any worse, I think that's fair to say. But you see Europe, Greece is not making any progress in solving their problems. China, the big stories in the paper today, the factories keep producing stuff, but they can't sell it.
Yeah, I read that story this morning.
And China is...
The inventory, it's just sitting there rotting.
Right. But at China, if you think about it, their economic problems directly affect this country because that's the market for our goods and services down the road.
They're buying our stuff.
They're buying our stuff, yeah. The fact that they sell a lot of stuff to us, yes. The American consumer who's not organized, like some of the manufacturing unions here or manufacturer organizations, but the consumer likes buying their products cheaply. And that's what a free market is all about. They like buying our products. Now, it may be a different factory here and a different worker and a different union, but there's plenty of interest in America selling overseas. And manufacturing in the United States, under the radar, has actually made a pretty good recovery. Our manufacturing sector across the country is doing much better. What they're not doing is creating jobs because they're using automation, and that's a structural problem that you can spend, people will write PhD theses on it, and I don't have any great answers. I'm going to try to focus on that and maybe give a speech on how we create jobs and what we have to do and why this administration and the potential of a Romney administration, neither of those are addressing. They talk about jobs, but then they don't have any plans. And it's not easy. I'm not suggesting they could come up with a magic bullet. It just doesn't exist. But we're going to have to, through opening our doors to immigrants and starting new businesses here to create jobs, we're going to have to improve our education system long term to create jobs. But if you look around, to get back to taxis and the city's economy, you look around the world, there's not a lot of evidence that we're going to have a boom all of a sudden that will generate a lot more tax revenues and help balance our budget. The city is doing better than the rest of the country in many things. We have record employment. Unemployment's up too. The economists debate whether that really means there's more unemployed people or just more people looking for jobs. But what is clear is there are more jobs keep getting created here. That's all to the good. But we're still going to have to find a ways to balance the budget. You don't have the $1 billion from taxi medallions. Going to hurt. Going to have to start focusing on that now.
Is it impossible to go back to the city council at this stage and say, hey, people, let's get this thing done?
Well, no, they could do that. They could pass a bill. If it isn't the same bill, however, Albany has said plain and simple.
Well, you could change one word or two or three, right, to make it not the same bill.
Well, if the one word or two or three is meaningless, why even waste your time changing it?
No, but what I'm saying is,
if it's meaningful, Albany has said no, they will not pass a different bill. And then they've still got to come back and do it. And they're not going to come back.
Even if the city council agreed to...
It would be...
It would still be up to Albany to
yes,
sign off on it.
Yes, all we're talking about. The whole issue was the city council, when they pass a bill called a home rule bill, and
right.
It simply says, we'd like you, Albany, to do the following. But it's still up to Albany to do it.
Okay.
Albany still has to pass the bill. This is clearly under state law. And, you know, the governor has stepped up here. He's done the right thing.
But
the Albany legislature did. So it wouldn't hurt. For some reason, or the Bill de Blasio, the public advocate, joined the suit to try to stop us from getting medallions and to have a home rule message be required. That's great, except that they're not going to do it, because what they'll pass is something that helps the yellow cab industry only and won't provide service. And why Bill is opposed to, I've never talked to him about it, but why he's opposed to getting taxi service for 4.5 boroughs and $1 billion to balance our budget, rather than some hypothetical argument, which we think in the end the courts are going to reject anyways.
But if they passed a home rule
it
bill...
It doesn't change anything. Albany still has to do it.
Correct, but that was basically the exact same bill that it
then
exists.
Then the judge would say it's okay, but it You still have to have Albany pass the bill.
Now, I understand that, but if they did that, you would think legally, and we would get past the problem that we
unless
are
unless somebody
facing
sues,
at the moment.
Which they probably will on something else. I mean, the whole idea here is to stall and stall and stall until everybody walks away, gives up, and goes back to the old line thinking. Then the old line people get protected. That's the problem in government. People say, why doesn't government work? Because you can keep doing that for an awful long time.
All right, Mr. Mayor, sit tight. I got lots to talk to you, questions to ask you today. We will get to that. And if you've got a question out there, it's time to get in line, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. Let me take 2 minutes here, and we'll be right back. It's now 22 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. I saw that in the Washington Post. The Post. You had an op-ed piece on fracking. I spoke with a man yesterday from central New York, where fracking would actually be taking place in the state of New York. They are so anxious for this to start up there because there's no economy whatsoever. But you're very much in favor of fracking.
Wait, look. Number one, we have been fracking. Virtually all gas comes out with fracking. That's the way you drill it out. Fracking is you drill down and then you split the rock apart with high-pressure water or explosives, a variety of different ways to do it, and then the more gas comes out, and you pump it out. Without fracking, you would have no gas. And they're starting to use fracking for oil, too, because otherwise you run out of oil someday, and we certainly wouldn't have this low-cost gas, which is really replacing a lot of coal and a lot of petroleum and cleaning up the air, but also is reducing everybody's energy costs. So that's the first thing. Fracking has been, and will be the only way as you get gas out. Number two, the question is, where do you do it, and how safe is it? And there are people who, on both sides, say it's a little bit dangerous, a lot dangerous, no danger, whatever. What I think is a responsible position is the one, and the governor has adopted it, incidentally, he deserves a lot of credit for this. You don't frack near the water supply, because if the people that think it can contaminate the water are right, you don't want to run those risks. That would be a very disastrous thing and very hard to reverse if at all possible. So number one, you're going to have it. Number two, you don't want it where the water is. But number three, there's no reason not to have it elsewhere. And it is a very big boon to the economy locally, but also all our economy. We need energy. We're not going back to living in tents and cooking by firewood. Just not going to happen. So if you put it in that perspective, responsible, controlled, regulated fracking in areas where the risks are low is probably a very good compromise for the economy and the environment. And there's nobody that's more pro-environmental protection than I am. But you also have to understand we need energy, and that would be the right balance. And the governor's there.
Yeah, the governor's definitely there, and the fracking has really taken off in some places. In North Dakota, for example, I think they're fracking for oil up there. And
I get they are starting to use it. I'm not
an
geologist, so I don't know.
The city was sued by, Christian John Foy. Who's Director of Public Affairs for the Office of the Public Advocate. This has to do with the West Indian parade of last year.
Last year, there were a couple of people, a city council member, if my recollection's correct, and a staffer for the Public Advocate, maybe a third. I just think those two that I remember. They pulled out their city badges, went through the police lines. The police did let them through. And then they claim they got roughed up. And regardless of whether that's true, we believe the cops didn't do anything wrong. But regardless, we've looked at this. And, the city's main job at public events, whether it's parades, concerts, things like that, is to keep the public safe. That's why they're there. And Ray Kelly and the members of the NYP do a great job at hundreds of events every year. West Indian Day Parade, which takes place on Labor Day traditionally, is one of the biggest parades in the country. People say it's the biggest. Maybe it is. But when you police at these events, you create lanes, or at lots of them, in other areas to position equipment and so that ambulances and fire trucks could get to a person if they have an emergency. Times Square on New Year's Eve is a good example. You have these fire lanes down the middle, and you don't let the crowd take over the whole block. In the past, at some of these events, people who are not law enforcement but do have these official passes. They think that they should have access to these areas. It's easy to get through the crowd. I don't know if they want to go and get, a sandwich or a drink or something. But it could be officials, elected officials, their staffs, or other VIP people, or people who think they're VIP. I could never figure out why you had to. What's the emergency? You know, that's up to the PD. If you want to pass a law or be the mayor, for example, you can do that, but you don't do it in that kind of time frame. It's like I've always wondered if I use lights and sirens rushing to a speech and somebody got hurt or killed, how would you ever explain that? I mean, is the speech was so important? No, I mean, you just police and fire and ambulances, they have to use lights and sirens. Well, same thing here in terms of getting through. You can talk to your local police officer, and police officers has always got an ID, you know, who needs to blot in your career, and so sometimes people push. But the truth is that no one should be in these areas unless they really are serving a public purpose or have an official role at the event, and there's no reason for it. It's just a distraction, people. So going forward, we're going to implement a policy starting next weekend and enforce the policy. Only police officers and public safety officials, of which I am not one, nor is anybody that I know that's not in police, fire, and ambulance, be permitted to access those areas. And government IDs or other status symbols that you want to pull out and say, hey, you know, I'm a big deal, we're just not going to let that happen. We've got to let the police do their job free of distractions. And, they've made the parades in this city many, many decades ago used to be dangerous, and they destroyed property and everything, and now they are a lot better. Are they perfect? No. I think last year at the West Indian Day Parade, we caught some guy with a machine gun a block away from the parade. Police have got to be able to focus on that rather than somebody who just wants to get through the crowds. I've talked to the Speaker of the City Council, Chris Quinn. She's 100% in agreement. I've talked to Ray Kelly, and this is what he's going to do. This is the city's policy from now on, and we're just going to enforce it. And we appreciate everybody understanding, no matter how important you think you are, that do it when it's important, in the place that's important. And if you're not a police officer, fire, EMS, let those professionals do their job.
I know that a few years ago you were concerned about the cost of parades, just all parades, and that you actually shortened some of them. And so has the overtime become more manageable?
Yeah, the overtime is less. And what we want to make sure is that people who are there for public safety and people who have some official role in the event, let's say the organizer of the parade, obviously has to be able to do that. So it's not just police and fire. But, you know, the mayor shouldn't be going rushing through saying, I want to get through quickly. I get in line with everybody else. I march in the parade. And I, you know, leave and go do my next event. And all these parades, you know, one of the hardest things I learned to do was day one, you march in a parade and you wave at people who are total strangers. But then, you know, you sort of start learning how to establish eye contact. And you know who likes you and who doesn't, who's in agreement. And when somebody yells at you, I still wave.
You know, those guys with the pictures of the 16-ounce cup, you don't wave to them?
You know, I do.
No, I know
I always don't. Walk up to, I met the other day, it was funny, I meet this older gentleman, retiree, and we're chit-chatting, and he got on and on and on about, you know, you're doing a great job, doesn't live in the city here. And I said, what'd you do before? And he was the chairman of the board of a major tobacco company.
And he still likes you.
He still likes
him. About that. What do you say we take a break here? Again, let me remind everybody, if you would like to talk with the mayor, you got a question, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. We're coming right back. Mayor Michael Bloomberg on a Friday John Gambling Show. Mr. Mayor, you and I, unfortunately, for way too many weeks and months and years, have had this conversation on guns. We had a 13-year-old killed just last night once again. And I don't know if you've heard mother. Here you go. Listen to this.
Too much violence is going on. Too many kids. He was only 13. 13. That was my baby. That was my baby. What do I do? What should I do now?
That should be sent to every legislator in America.
I don't know. I speak at too many funerals and read too many of these stories, and I just wonder, what would I do if it was somebody I loved, you know, rather than just...
The pain is indescribable.
You just... As a parent, think about that. What, you know, and it is just too many guns on the streets. It's not the only problem. And, you know, the argument, guns don't kill people, people kill people, is one of the most disingenuous things you can say. It does take a person to pull the trigger, but if they didn't have the guns, we are the only developed country in the world with this problem. We, literally, there's no guns in these other countries or a trivial number, and nobody's trying to take away their civil rights. We have a constitutional protection that you have the right to bear arms. If you read the Constitution, some scholars would say it talks about when you're going in the army and the National Guard.
Right.
The militia doesn't talk about, and nobody, the Founding Fathers, I don't think, ever envisioned AK-47s in the hands of people. But I don't know what it takes, Sean. Somebody asked me what would shock Congress. Well, they had a congresswoman shot, and she's still recovering, and who knows how she'll have a long battle for a long, long time. And that didn't seem to do anything.
12 people shot in Aurora, Colorado. I mean, the list goes on and on. We don't have to go over it again.
You know, and we don't. It's not like you're taking away people's rights. We had. The president campaigned on he would try to pass a law banning AK-47s, assault weapons. Governor Romney signed a law and gave a speech favoring it in Massachusetts, banning AK-47s, assault weapons. And now neither one says anything about it. All you got to do to make the problem a lot less and save tens of thousands of lives. We kill 34 people a day in this country with illegal guns. During the next presidential term, there will be 48,000 people. If you just take 34 and multiply it by the number of days in a presidential term, it comes up to 48,000 lives, and a very big percentage of those could be saved. The cost to society, all of us are paying for this. People understand it because of the police needed and the hospitals and all of this stuff, and people are afraid to go out and shop and that sort of thing. It's an enormous burden on everybody. And there's no argument for it. Congress actually one time had the guts to stand up and pass some sensible laws. You cannot buy a gun legally if you're a minor, if you're a convicted felon, if you have a criminal record, or a psychiatric problem, or a drug problem. They should add if you're on the no-fly list. You can be on the no-fly list but still buy a gun. And then what did they do? They don't appropriate any money to enforce the law. They let states get away with not sending the data, so when you do a data check, you can't find out whether the person's legal or not. And then today, 40% or some number like that of all guns are sold either over the internet or at gun shows where there's a loophole in the law. It doesn't require a background check. People say, oh, it would take long. 99% of all gun dealers do it in 24 hours. They don't have a problem. They obey the law. And if you survey NRA members and you survey, we hired actually a very Republican-oriented firm that does a lot of polling, and they found something like 82% of NRA members and of gun owners, whether members or not, favored banning assault weapons. I mean, it's just common sense.
Talked with Marty Golden at the beginning of the week. He's introducing some gun bills.
But the only thing that would matter in the state, New York State already has the toughest gun laws in the country.
He wants to extend the automatic prison time for an illegal gun from 3 to 5.
It's a ridiculous thing, because then the district attorneys won't prosecute and the judges will find a ways to let you plead to a less dumb. The only thing that Marty can do that will help is micro stamping, where they have to go and you can tell from the casing where the gun came from. And he says, oh, no, I assume he was certainly opposed to it before. I saw in the paper Remington, upstate company, will move out of New York if they pass any more laws. Well, I don't want to take away their jobs, but you're talking about moving and losing a few jobs or losing a lot of lives. That's the choice, so you make your choice.
All right.
The only thing that Albany can do, the governor and the legislature, that will help more than what they've already done, because they really have done a lot. So 3.5-year mandatory if you have a loaded gun that's illegal. And Plaxico Burress, remember, went to jail because of
price,
it.
So
sometimes the district attorneys prosecute and the judges actually throw the book at the perpetrators. But a lot too many times they don't. So strengthening it isn't going to make it any worse, any better. Maybe it'll even make it worse, because then the judges and the district attorneys be less inclined. Nobody's going to put you in jail for 5 years just for carrying a gun. If the law says they have to, they just won't have the charge and you won't go to jail at all. It's micro stamping that could do give us something else. Yeah, penalties are nice, and Marty Golden's worked with us on some of these penalty things, and that's fine. But from my way of thinking, it's micro stamping, or they don't have to waste the time. If anything they do, I think will be dysfunctional. Some of my staff doesn't think so, but I don't.
All right, we were talking about home rule and judges ruling on that as relate to the taxi deal. Another judge used the same New York State constitutional argument to roll back the mobility tax for the MTA. This sounds to me like a major problem. I'm not for big taxes.
I have an idea. I got an idea.
Too.
Why don't we do
Here
the following? Let's toll the bridges and take the money and give it to the MTA. That will give people a disincentive to drive, free up our streets so deliveries can be faster, your prices in your stores will come down, more commerce, more jobs be created, and the MTA will have the budget that Joe Loda needs, who's trying to do as good a job as anybody can. He's great. But he needs money, and this would be a disaster. Hell, if the courts uphold this judge's decision.
Governor's all over this, too, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, this is because the Albany legislature, remember, congestion pricing, every newspaper was in favor of it. I think the polls in every one of the five boroughs were in favor of it. Every good government group was in favor of it. Every union was in favor of it. The only time it didn't get an upvote was when it went to Albany. They said they had a better idea. Okay, Albany, what's your better idea? Because this didn't work.
You should have expressed that long ago.
There's I know
a guy
I should
before
have.
You that did
I
that
certainly
came up
should
with
have.
Idea.
Who knew?
Who knew? All right. This morning, homeless shelters population is up. You made the comment that that's because they're slightly nicer.
I don't think. No. Number one, if you don't like what we have in terms of being able to move people out of shelters, call Albany. They cut back. We had one program which was very successful. They cut
it
back.
Advantage, I think.
Advantage. Because they cut it down, automatically the federal subsidy went away. City can't afford to do that on their own. And the biggest public advocacy group for the homeless was against that program, which was the only thing moving people in. So this is so ridiculous.
This was moving people from the streets and the shelters into housing.
You'd first go to the shelters. Then you had the advantage. Then you could get these vouchers. You could move into basically subsidized housing in the free market. And they fought against it. And so for them to come back now and complain is just the height of hypocrisy. But the bottom line is nobody that looks at this, nobody wouldn't agree with the statement. The shelter system is dramatically better than it was 10 years ago. And I don't know how much Rudy had improved it or not. Somebody said the paper, you're taking a shot at Rudy. No, this had gone on for an awful long time. And for all I know, Rudy did improve it. I just don't remember those days. But we have focused on doing it. It's like NYCHA. Everybody else is ripping down their public housing. We're putting money into ours, and it's not enough. It's never going to be enough. The shelter system is better. There was a dip when we got rid of the Advantage program. Of some people were going into shelter because then you could get these vouchers, and it did drop down, but now it's come back up. And I don't think that was a big calculus, part of the calculus of whether they go to shelter. What we are trying to do is to, if you need shelter, the first thing we talk to you and ascertain that you really need it. If you just want to have a different place to live or a different kind of experience, no, that's the public's not going to pay for that. If you really need shelter, the state constitution says you have a right to shelter. The courts have held that's true to everybody. So if you come to this city, get off the plane or off the bus or get out of your car or however you got here, you can go straight to shelter, and we have to provide it. That's what the law is, so we'll do that. But today, it is so much better than it used to be. Is it great? No, it's not the Plaza Hotel. And the newspapers have a field day, and it's very fun, but that's not what shelter is supposed to be, and that's not what the public can afford or the public wants. It is supposed to be a temporary thing with the help you need, other social services to get back on your feet so you can rejoin society and be in charge of your own destiny and pay your own way.
I was surprised at the population. Half of it is children.
There's two kinds of shelters they talk about, single adults, male and female separate, and they have very different problems, emotional, drug problems, lots of problems, than families. The families, a typical family, as we call it, is a single mom with two children. That's on average. And we've got to make sure that while they're in shelter, the kids still can go to school and have a meal in their stomach and be safe and all of those kinds of things. And then we've got to try to help the mother find a ways to join the workforce and have care for her children and find permanent housing and move on. And because of the economy, the downturn in the economy, we think as much as anything. And to some extent, there are some people, about, I think it's about 10% of the people, it could be five, I think 10%, but I got to check the number, of the people are people from out of state who just come here and we have to provide shelter. But we'll do what the law says. We'll do it as well as we can. It is not going to be up to the standards of how everybody would want to live, and the public doesn't want to pay for up to those standards, but we are making sure that it is safe and clean. And yes, I'm sure there's plenty of places you can find where it isn't perfect, but this is, you know, a shelter system. We're not going to leave anybody on the streets. And I've always tried to measure the what I call a compassion index for New York City. If you look at how many people as a percentage of the population are living on the streets here, it is, you know, 1 in 3,000 here. In some of these big cities, it's 1 in 200. And we're 1 in 3,000. Numbers like that, it varies each year. And the percentage of the people who are on the streets, live on the streets, goes down every single year. You know, almost every year, it bumps up and down, but the trend is clearly down. And we actually have real science to measure it. It's either the last Monday in January or the first Monday in February. We send out 500 volunteers dressed as vagrants. We assign them to a subway train, under a bridge, down an alley, in a park, whatever. And then we send out 2,000 volunteers who go out all night long and count the homeless. And we assume we miss the same percentage of real homeless that we miss of the decoys. That's why the decoys are there. And so, you know, people can just say, oh, I see more homeless. But that's not the real world. The real world is they're an awful lot less. And if you see somebody lying in the streets or on the sidewalk, sleeping or passed out or something, pick up the phone, call 311 right away, or on the 311 app. There's an app you can load down, 311, and you just, the homeless person, hit a button, your GPS in your smartphone tells you where it is.
Oh, you didn't even have to talk. You just hit the buttons and it
Hit the button, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, you got to hit two or three buttons. Right. It really does work. And we will have an outreach team go and get that person and help that person. We can't incarcerate them unless it's very cold outside, but we can give them some shelter and move them on and try to make sure they've got a meal in their stomach and that they're, you know, if they need medicines, do whatever you have to do. But this is just a made-up thing to sell newspapers, and it really is so unfair to those people who have worked so hard to make this system so much better, including the taxpayers of this city who are paying for all of this.
A lot of money. I don't know how many millions, but...
Big bucks.
Big money. Are you still thinking of privatizing the parking meters?
We've asked for proposals, whether they come back with good proposals or not. If it makes sense, yeah. If it doesn't make sense, no. You know, Chicago did it. I mean, people criticize the deal. I don't know enough about what was done, whether it was a good deal or a bad deal. Every one of these deals is different. You can structure them any way you want. One thing's for sure. We should not privatize essential services. Police, fire.
How about bridges? Infrastructure.
Some things you can, some things you can't. The politics.
You think it's a good idea?
Well, the politics of doing it are hard because the people who are working there now are typically public service employees who are unionized, and they fight that. But there are things. We, for example, have privatized half of all the sanitation collection in the city. Nobody focuses on that, but that's really what it is. The industrial and commercial waste is picked up by private carters, and the residential and street corner waste is picked up by the sanitation department that also sweeps and plows the
streets.
Was
there a time, because I don't remember, was there a time when the sanitation did it all?
I know it must have been a long time ago. If you go a long time ago, they used to have pigs roaming the streets to eat the garbage. That was the that was the ways they did it.
I would run on that next time, you know?
I don't think that that's a modern-day solution to the problem. But then there are some things that you certainly can privatize. There's some things that, and some things you can privatize a lot cheaper, and some things you can't. And, you know, some of these big projects, and we keep coming back, we're putting together a group to try to give some better oversight to the big software projects. I know of no company that's ever had a big software project that hasn't had exactly the same problems we have. There's mission creep, and there's it turns out it wasn't what you're trying to automate wasn't as easy, and that sort of thing. And the successes, you say, oh, this, all we got to do is do that. Yeah, but you know, those companies have big successes, have also had plenty of things that didn't work. That's just the real world.
All right, speaking of the real world, Mr. Mayor, you can see on the screen here, we got some folks that want to talk with you, ask you some questions. We will get to that in just a moment here on the John Gambling Show. Again, I'm afraid there's no lines open, so you're out of business here. For this week anyway. We'll come right back.
Mayor Mike and John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
And the Mayor's Hour is brought to you by Racatina Lexus. Racatina Lexus in New Jersey, Route 35 Oakhurst, Route 9 South Freehold, Boston Post Road, Larchmont, New York. All right, Mr. Mayor, grab that headset if you would, please, sir, and we will see who's on the line here. Going to start with Tony up in Westchester. Hello, Tony. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Mr. Mayor, I just would like to know, as a self-made billionaire, do you agree with the president that you couldn't have done it without him?
You know, Tony, nobody's more a believer in the American dream and capitalism than I am. I think in this case, if you listen to what Obama said, he's sort of, number one, we should be focusing on how we're going to create jobs and guns and environment and lots of other stuff in this country and fiscal problems. But I don't think Obama really said nobody is responsible or should take credit for what they've done. What he did say, if I understood what I read, was that if you didn't have the public school system, our kids wouldn't have educations, and therefore, when you hire somebody, you'd have to teach them to read and write. And so that's not saying that it takes away anything from the entrepreneur. It is true you use the bridges to come into work. It is true that the country is protected by an army and there's a firefighter ready to respond if your place is burning down. And so you have to have those things. But I don't think, in all fairness, he said that people didn't do it on their own. And I've always said to kids, you know, get rid of the words I and me, use we and us, because you do need lots of help from other people. That is not taking away from those people, I hope myself included, but people who started, had some guts, put their own money and the sweat and blood on the line and built a business. And without them, those businesses wouldn't exist. And I think that's what Obama really meant and would have said. But I guess you got to ask the president. That's what I believe anyways. That yes, these people who did it themselves deserve an enormous amount of credit. And it's also true that if there wasn't a cop on the corner to keep them safe and an ambulance to respond when they have a heart attack, they wouldn't be able to do it.
All right. Thanks, Tony. Beverly, you're up next. We've got the mayor.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. As a driver in New York City, I feel that the new bike lanes and embankments would impede access for emergency vehicles in case of a serious event. Has this been considered?
We don't put any bicycle lanes in Beverly without making sure we talk the local firehouse, the ambulance corps, police. Every single time we make sure that they can turn, make U-turns and get around, and you don't do anything without that, because that's the number one priority to make sure. Actually, you know, a lot of these bicycle lanes get some of the people out of the way so they can go down. And number traffic deaths are lower than ever before, but in answer to your question, response times from police cars, ambulances, and fire trucks is as low as it's ever been. And so, you know, that doesn't mean that it's because of bicycle lanes, but I think it's pretty good evidence that they're not hurting. And the number of traffic deaths keeps going down with all the bicycle lanes.
All right, Bev, thank you very much. Let's see here. I think we're going to go to line 5, which is Mark and Brewster. You've got
Hi,
the
Mark.
Mayor's ear.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
On the microstamping issue, have, it's made of metal, and it's micro. It means if I take a pic, a file, anything, I can screw that up.
You can, absolutely right, Mark. But keep in mind, most people who have guns on the streets that are killing people don't have an education. That shows up every time. Unfortunately, the crime seems to go with lack of education. And they aren't clever is the right word, or they don't plan far enough. However you want to phrase it, they are unlikely to do it. A professional criminal would absolutely be able to, you're right, defeat micro-stamping. On the other hand, right now we don't have it for anybody. So if the handful of times the cops found a casing where somebody was smart enough to kill the micro-stamping with a file or something, at least they'd know they should go after not the average kid who just pulls a gun because it's cute, but somebody who's a real professional criminal. So you're right, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't do micro-stamping. It's the only thing that Albany could do that would help us identify quicker and in more cases who did the shooting.
Are you a believer that the mandatory sentencing for a loaded gun works? I go back to what you just said about the criminals. I don't think they think about those things.
They don't think about it generally, but some do. The worse you make it, the less likely the district attorneys are to prosecute, and the more likely it is a judge will let somebody plea down so that they don't. But as I pointed out, Plaxico did his time, and I'd say nothing but good things about the guy. He made a mistake, he paid for it, and I hope he scores a lot of touchdowns.
All right, Mr. Mayor, our game time is up. The clock has run out. We're down to zero for this hour, but we'll see you next Friday. Thank you very much, as always. Mayor Michael Bloomberg, lots more to go. Stick around.